So we're holding on Pei Bays Amud Aleph. We're holding Pei Bays Amud Aleph second line. So we said yesterday, we were discussing yesterday the question in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we had the Chachamim saying, we had the Chachamim talking about a case where a person wants somebody else to make an Eruv, where a person wants a storekeeper, a wine seller, a baker, or whatever, to acquire to acquire for him a share of the Eruv Chatzeres. And we said the Chachamim said that doesn't work because you can't acquire things using money. You need Meshicha or some other valid form of kinyan. However, then the Mishnah continued, if it was somebody else, not a person who commercially sells bread or wine or whatever, then you would be able to, because you're able to, then you give him money, and in effect, you're making him your shliach. Now, the reason for the difference is that you need a person's das when you're making, you need a person's das when you're making an eruv for him. Good morning, Ellie. You need a person's das when you're making an eruv for him, and the problem is, in this case, the person doesn't have the das to, in this case, as we talked about yesterday, his das, his intention was to acquire it with his money, and that doesn't work because you can't acquire metalpolin with money, as we discussed yesterday. The Eliezer might say that this case is an exception, but the Chum aren't allowing for that. So on the other hand, when it comes, to make an eruv for a person, you need his das, said the Tanna Kamma. Then Rabbi Yehuda had said, "Bamed varam amurim." When is that talking about? Only by eruv tchumin do you need the person's das, because eruv tchumin you're gaining in one direction, but you're losing in the other direction. As we said yesterday, you place an eruv, let's say east of the city, so that makes it that now you're able to walk further east than you otherwise would, but you're losing out that now you can't walk as far west as you usually would. On the other hand, says Rabbi Yehuda, when it comes in Eruv Chatzeres, then you don't need the person's das, because then it's a schus for him to be able to carry in the chatzer. So we started discussing, Shmuel had said the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, which, for, among other things, implies that Rabbi Yehuda is arguing with the Chachamim, otherwise no need to say the halacha is like him. So we mention in that connection something that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, that when Rabbi Yehuda uses the expression emasai, which means when is this, or bamed varam amurim, in what case is this talking about, in a Mishnah, then he's not coming to argue, he's coming to explain. You, Tanna Kamma, have set a general rule, but let me explain that actually that rule, and you would also agree, Chachamim, that this doesn't apply in all cases. You have to formulate it more precisely. It only applies to this case, not to that one. So that was so we said Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi holds that Rabbi Yehuda is not arguing with the Chachamim over here, and Shmuel holds he is arguing. So now Gufa, so now Pei Bez Amud Aleph, second line, Gufa, getting back to, we said before, Amr Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi, Kol Mokam Sha'amar Rabbi Yehuda Emasai Uva Meba Mishaseinu. Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi had said that whenever in the Mishnah Rabbi Yehuda says Emasai or Bameh, Bameh Dvar Mamurim, in what case is this talking about, Einei El Lefarish Dibri Chachamim, then he's only coming to explain what the Chachamim said, meaning he's not arguing with them. Rabbi Yechanan says, no, when it comes to Emasai, which means when is this, then I agree, he's only coming to clarify. You, Chachamim, have set a general rule, but we all agree that that only applies in this particular circumstance, not in that one. But when he says, Bameh Dvarim Amurim, like he does in our Mishnah, which means when is this talking about, then Lachlok, then he's coming to argue. So which would mean, in other words, that Rabbi Yochanan would hold, like we said yesterday, that Shmuel also holds that Rabbi Yehuda is arguing in our Mishnah. Now, Shmuel may not hold of the whole rule at all. It's possible that Shmuel holds that even when Rabbi Yehuda is saying Emasai, he's coming to argue. We don't know, because Shmuel doesn't address that one way or the other. But we do know that we have, therefore, just between Rabbi Yehuda and Levi and Rabbi Yochanan alone, we have a machloikas whether Rabbi Yehuda is arguing in this Mishnah or not. And we have Shmuel also implicitly saying that Rabbi Yehuda is arguing, which is why he has to say the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Anyway, so the question is, the Gemara asks, the Emasai Lefarashu. So you're telling me, so far, though, at least what we have is both Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan both agree that when Rabbi Yehuda says Emasai, which means when is this, then they're both saying Lafarishu. They're both saying it's to explain. But is that so? V'hotnan. I'll give you a Mishnah where we have an Amosai, and it seems that Rabbi Yehuda is arguing with the Chachamim. V'hotnan. We learn in a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, the Elohein Apsulim, the following people apostle Eidos. Now you have, there are people who apostle to give Eidos on a Daraisa level, because they've done things that are also Daraisa, and the Torah tells us that a Rosha, which in this case means somebody who's done an Aveda Daraisa, is not, what he's done in public, whatever, is not allowed to give Eidos. But then you have certain, the Mishnah over here is focusing on cases where a person is posel Eidos midrabanan. So the Mishnah says, number one, hamsachik bekovia, somebody who gambles. Now, the Gemara discusses there in Sanhedrin, and we're going to have it briefly over here, two possible reasons why a person would be posel Eidos if he gambles. One way of understanding it is because winning money through gambling is a form of gezel. So you have a concept, there's a concept in halacha called asmachta, which is, you and I can make a business deal together or some other kind of deal where if such and such happen, where if you do such and such, then you'll get such and such. And if not, then not. That's, you know, how any business deal works. You go for me and you go do this job for me and I'll pay you X amount. That's not a smachta. A smachta would be where the fulfillment of it is not completely in his hands. So imagine, for example, if I were to say, for example, if it's raining next Tuesday, then I'll give you money. That's not under our control. So that would be called an asmachta. So it's not you don't have it. So asmachta meloshen smichus das. You don't have a mental guarantee. The person who's receiving the thing is not doesn't and the person who's giving don't have a mental guarantee that in fact this is or isn't going to take place because it's out of their hands. Now, in the case of gambling, you have that kind of thing. You're gambling, for example, you and I are gonna roll the dice. Whoever rolls a seven first is gonna get X amount of money, let's say. It's not something in our control. There's no smichus das, and therefore, when one person rolls and wins the money, the other one hasn't really given it away full-heartedly because he had in mind that he might win. So therefore, it can be considered a type of gezel. That's one reason. The other idea, that would be one reason maybe to say that he's considered, so he wouldn't be on a ganon, a daraisa level, maybe he wouldn't be a gazlan. But midrabanan, we could say that that's gezel, and it would be also. The other way of understanding it would be that a person gambles once in a while, that's not necessarily osur. What we're talking about is a person who's einas sukin b'yeshuva shaloylam, a person who habitually gambles. That's all he makes his money from. So he doesn't know the way that things work in the world. So now what happens when he comes to give Eidos? He's not going to be careful to make sure that his Eidos is accurate, that he's not causing that a person is going to lose money unjustly. Because earning money means very little to him. He doesn't earn money in any productive way, basically. So those are the two reasons, and that's going to drive the next piece of Gemara over here of which of those reasons is the one why the Masachet Bekovia is Osir. Then continues the Mishnah, but let's finish off the Mishnah first. Umal habiribis, also a person who lends money at ribis, which can mean, Tosfos says there in Sanhedrin, not just when it's ribis daraisa, but even you have many cases that it talks about in Bava Metzia, where something is ribis only dirabanan. Even so, if a person does that, then he's posel la'edus dirabanan. The third one is mafriche yonim, people who make pigeons fly, which the Gemara there in Sanhedrin has two possibilities what that means. One is, again, it's a type of gambling, where they do pigeon racing, basically. Whichever pigeon wins the race, then the owner of it is going to get X amount of money that's in the pot. The other way, the Gemara explains, mafriche yonim is people train their pigeons to go and lure other people's pigeons away. So you have your trained pigeon that goes to a birdhouse and lures the other pigeons out of the birdhouse to follow it. So on a daraisa level, it's not gezel because the birdhouse is anyway out in the field. That's not the birds in it are not fully yours. But nevertheless, midrabanan, it's considered gezel according to that explanation. And the fourth one, besoichrei shvius, people who do business with shmitah fruit. We know that shmitah fruit, one of the rules about it is that you're not allowed to sell it commercially. You're allowed to sell tiny quantities of it in order to buy other food that you're going to use, but you can't make a business out of selling it. So you have a person who does that is possible edus de Rabbanan. And the Rambam describes it based on the Gemara over there. You know, imagine you have a person who, you know, for 6 years you don't know that they're not doing any business, you know, of all of a sudden Schmitte year they open up a store and they start selling food. They start selling fruit or wine or what have you. Then there's there's good reason to think they got it from Schmitte fruit that they collected. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Amar of Yehuda Amasai. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says on this, when is this? So he's using the word Amasai, which Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yechanan both told us means that he's not arguing, just clarifying. Anyway, he says, Bizman she'en lo umnus elahi. This applies, at least as far as the gambling, only when he has no other business. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned about the gezel aspect of gambling. He doesn't care about the asmachta business that we said. So he's not considered a gazlan. The reason he agrees that a gambler is posseledus, but he's saying we're talking about somebody who the only thing he does is gambling. That's the only way he earns his money. So therefore, again, he's not doing a productive thing. So he's not doing a productive job. So therefore, he doesn't realize how hard it is. He doesn't realize how hard it is to earn a dollar. And therefore, so when he's coming to give edus, he may be careless with his edus and not take care to get the details accurate to make sure that somebody else is not losing money unjustly. Because in his viewpoint, you know, okay, money is easy come, easy go. So the guy is going to lose a few dollars because of my edus, because I didn't notice the circumstances correctly and I told them over wrongly based. And big deal, you know. I know from my experience that it's easy enough to win money. So then he doesn't realize that's not the way the world works. So anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda says that's why he's puzzled, only if he gambles all the time and doesn't have another job. Avo yeshle umnas shloihi, but Rabbi Yehuda says if he has a different job and he just gambles on the side, hareza kosher, then he's kosher because Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned about the asmachta part. V'tonia lo b'braisa, but now we learn in a braisa regarding this. V'chamrem ben she'ein lo umnus elahi, or ben she'yesh lo umnus shaloihi, harei's a posel. The Chum say that no, whether he has a different job or not, either way he's posel. And we assume b'pashtus those chachamim are the same as the Tanakhama of the Mishnah. So it comes out Rabbi Yehuda is arguing. They're saying the gambler is posel because of the asmachta problem. So therefore it doesn't matter whether it's just he gambles all the time or he just does it once in a while. Either way, he's earning money through gezel. Rabbi Yehuda is saying the gezel part I don't have a problem with. I just have a problem that he's not earning money in a productive way. So we see that they're arguing, even though Rabbi Yehuda is using the word emesai. The answer is that the answer is that the chachamim in that braisa is not in fact the same chachamim, is not in fact the Tanakhama of the Mishnah. Hahi Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rabbi Tarfon. That braisa, which is saying that the chachamim are saying whether he does or doesn't have a different umnus, either way it's considered gezel. That would be Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in the name of Rabbi Tarfon. In other words, so you have three different opinions over here. You have the chachamim, you have Rabbi Yehuda. Or not three different opinions. You have Rabbi Yehuda, you have the Chachamim in the Mishnah, you have Rabbi Yehuda clarifying what the Chachamim are saying, that in the Mishnah the Chachamim are saying, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying, you and I both agree, that the problem isn't asmachta, the problem is that he's not earning money in a constructive way. But then in the Braisa, when they say whether he has an umnus or not, in other words, the very fact that you're gambling is gezel, that is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in the name of Rabbi Tarfon. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Now, you have a situation like this. You can have where a person, we know if a person makes a neder to become a nazir, then of course they become a nazir. Now, what happens, you have a scenario, let's say, you have some people are sitting together. They see somebody coming in the distance. So sometimes you had the Mishnah and the Gemara and Nazir mentioned that sometimes people would sometimes make a neder of becoming a Nazir, not really in an appropriate way. The right way to do it is because a person realizes they're having a hard time controlling their taivus and therefore they need to make a neder of Nazirus and restrict themselves from wine and so forth for 30 days in order to get their, in order to get themselves back on track. But sometimes you have people would make such a neder more of nazirus more frivolously. It's still valid. The halacha is just not the right thing to do. So sometimes people would say that as like to, in order to buttress, in order to strengthen what they're saying. Like the same, you know, the same way as sometimes you have, sometimes nowadays people will say, I swear to God, such and such, which is also inappropriate, using Hashem's name in vain. But the same way in those times you would have sometimes would say, I'll be another if such and such, like to strengthen what they're saying. So suppose you have then a case, the Mishnah describes over there, that you have a bunch of people, you have a couple of people sitting together. They see somebody walking down the street. He's still far away, and they can't tell who he is yet. But one of them says, I think he's a Nazir, and I'll be a Nazir if he is a Nazir. And the other one says, on the contrary, I think he's not a Nazir. I think he's Stam just wearing his hair long or whatever, and I'll be a Nazir if it turns out he's not a Nazir. So the Mishnah goes on to say, according to the Chachamim, then fine, once the person comes, once he walks closer to them and they see whether they recognize him and they know whether he's a Nazir or not, then whichever one said whichever one's Nazirus takes effect based on whichever one it was that said. But a Braisa says, the Tanya Omer of Yehuda Mishrim Reb Tarfon, Lo'olam Ein Echad Vehed Nazir, neither one of these people who are sitting there and talking ever becomes a Nazir in that case. Lefisha Ein Nazirus Ela Lahafla, because the whole point, because the Nazirus can only be where there's a definitive neder of Nazirus, not where it's a suffix. As in this case, where until the guy comes closer, it's a suffix whether their Nazirus, whether their neder of Nazirus was going to be in effect or not. The word hafla comes from when the Torah describes a nazir, it starts by saying ishki yafli linder neder nazir, where a person speaks out clearly a neder of nazirus. So Rabbi Tarfon focuses, Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of Rabbi Tarfon, focuses on that word, on that word yafli, that it means that he actually has to say something explicit, not something that's going to be a suffix. So therefore, so we see Alma kibben de masakule in nazir iloy nazirhu. So we see Reb Tarfon in effect is saying that since there's a suffix at the time when he says this person coming closer to us is a nazir or isn't a nazir, loy meshabed nafshe. Reb Tarfon takes the view then that the person is not meshabed himself. He doesn't fully accept the neder of nazirus, and therefore it's not a valid neder. Hachanami, the same thing over here. A parafin is going to say, kivin de la yada ikoni ilaikoni. The person doesn't know whether he's going to end up being koina, meaning whether he's going to end up winning the game or not, because it's gambling after all. He has a chance of winning and a chance of losing. Loi gomer o makne. So he's not fully, a parafin would say, therefore, he's not fully makne the money to the other person, and therefore, when the other person takes it, then it's a form of gezel. So that would be, so the Chachamim in the last Braisa that we quoted would be that opinion. So you have Reb Tarfon holds that. Reb Yehuda, even though he says in the name of Reb Tarfon, the din by a nazir, he himself argues with that. He himself says, at least when it comes to gambling, that it doesn't make a difference. That it's not a matter of asmachta. Not that it doesn't make a difference. That's not a matter of asmachta. He doesn't hold like Reb Tarfon in the case of the nazir that, or maybe he holds like him in the nazir, but at least he doesn't hold them by like him by gambling, that there's a problem with it in and of itself, that it's Gezel. He holds there's only a problem if a person is only gambling and not earning money from anything else. And the Chachamim in that same Mishnah are saying the same thing. So it comes out correctly, like we said, like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yechanan had said, that when he says Emasai, he's not coming to argue. Because he's not coming to argue on the Chachamim in the Mishnah. Only in the Braisa is there a dissenting opinion. Which Tosfos gets into a discussion here and also in Sanhedrin on the question. So based on all of this, then are we saying that you are allowed to gamble? After all, we're saying according to Reb Tarfon, it might be a problem. According to the Chachamim and Reb Yehuda over here, it seems it's not a problem. And also Tosfos goes on to say maybe it's not even a problem. Maybe it's not even a problem of smachta at all. Maybe again, like Rabbi Yehuda is saying over here, the problem is only if he earns his money only from that and anything else. So Tosfos concludes that maybe in fact gambling is not in and of itself usur. Not necessarily. You know, Tosfos ends off saying that. Not necessarily are you going to be required. If you lose the bet, not necessarily can the other person require you api alacha to pay. But if you do, then it wouldn't necessarily be considered that the other person taking it is gezel. With that said, though, the Rambam, on the other hand, paskins like the opinion that gambling in and of itself is Gezel, and in Shulchan Aruch it brings both possibilities, which is so you do have the question, whether occasional gambling is Gezel or not. Which I guess is relevant for the next time any of us want to go to Vegas or Atlantic City or whatever. All right. Hadron Allah Chaloy. Okay, so now the next perek, we're continuing on the topic of Eruv and Shituf. The first few blot of the perek, the first few Mishnayos, we're going to be dealing with more dinim having to do with the food for the Eruv. We're going to be talking about the amount of it and then various other details like that. Then in the middle of the perek, we're going to switch gears and we're going to start talking about dinim that apply to water in a chatzer. You have cases where, for example, you have a water pit in a chatzer, you have a water or between chatzeres, you have a water channel, you have a porch that's over the water. What are all the various dinim that apply then as far as mechitzis in order to be able to draw from that water on Shabbos? So that'll be the second half of the perek. So the Mishnah starts off, Ketzed Mishtatkin B'Tchumin, how do you make a Shituf when it comes to Tchumin? Now, until now, we were talking about Eruv Chatzeres and Shituf Avoyis. Now, our Mishnah is going to start talking about how it works when you're making an Eruv Tchumin, if you want to have more than one person be able to join with you in your Eruv. For example, we learned earlier in the Masechta, you could have a situation where, for example, Talmid Chacham is coming in a certain direction and he's going to be outside the city for Shabbos and everybody wants to come and hear his Drasha. So you may want to have, it's not just you personally want to go and listen to him and therefore you want to make an Eruv Chatzeres, you may want that many people in the city want to. So how do you do that? So Ketzed Mishtatfin B'Tchumin, Maniach HaSachavis, you put down a barrel of food. A barrel doesn't just have to be, by the way, with liquids like wine or whatever. Tosfos points out, fruit in those days, they also stored in barrels. So whatever, you put down a barrel. And he says, I'm doing this on behalf of everybody in my city. And you have a minimum amount of food in it for each person. Shtei sudas, as we've discussed before. Actually, I think you have a machloikas, whether when you're doing this, do you need shtei sudas individually for each person, or is it enough to have two sudas generally across all of them? But whatever. Anyway, the point is that you're being makna the food to everybody else. Obviously, as we said in the previous perek, you have to give it to somebody else to be koine it on their behalf, and then that person lifts it up. So he says, this is going to be for all the people in my city. For anybody who's going to be going, for example, there's a person sitting Shiva outside the city, and we want to be able to go on Shabbos to be Menachem Avol, or there's a wedding going on, a Sheva Brachas, and we want to be able to go there. And then the din is v'chol shekibol olav mibo'odiyoyim mutter. Anybody who accepted the Eruv on themselves before Shabbos, meaning that he plans to use that Eruv, is allowed to use it. Mishatechshach, but if he only accepts the Eruv on himself after Shabbos began, osur, that it would be osur for him to go. Shein ma'avid mishatechshach, because you can't make an Eruv after Shabbos begins. So it has to be that they were included in the Eruv before Shabbos. So the Gemara starts off, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Ein ma'arvin elo l'dvar mitzvah. Rabbi Yosef says that when you're making an Eruv Tchumen, you can only do it for a dvar mitzvah. Meaning, in other words, that exactly that. In other words, you can't just on the face of it, what Rabbi Yosef is saying is you can't just make an Eruv, for example, let's say I want to be able to go take a hike outside the city further to the east on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, let's say. Only where there's a mitzvah. Now, Tosfos points out that the meaning of a mitzvah over here is a little more elastic. We have, for example, we had an example in the third perek where a person says, I know there are goyim coming in a certain direction, but I don't know which one. I want my Eruv to depend on that, whether it's going to be to the east or the west. So now how is it a mitzvah to deal with the goyim? So if we're talking about that you need it in order to run away from the goyim because they're hostile. Style goyim, then yeah, that can be a mitzvah in itself. But also, Tosfos points out anyway that what we can be talking about is the Gemara mentioned over there that the goyim connection might be the mayor or so, somebody else high up in government. That would be considered a dvar mitzvah, because why are you going to talk to him? You're going, let's say, because you need to talk with him about something that the tzibur needs. You have, for example, you have to go meet with the mayor, or you have to go meet with your congressperson or whatever about something involving current events to get him to, to allow the yeshivas to reopen or whatever, whatever things are on the current agenda. So that would be a dvar mitzvah as well. With that said, though, the Terumas HaDeshen also says, for example, that even if you're saying that I want to do it in order to be, let's say, for example, on Yom Tov, I want to be able to make an Eruv Tchumen in order to be able to walk and in order to be able to enjoy the fresh air outside the city, he says that would be a valid reason, that would be a valid Dvar Mitzvah as well, because Simchas Yom Tov. So you have this concept. Anyway, that Rabbi Yosef is saying you can only do it for a Dvar Mitzvah. Rashi's, if you look in the first Rashi in the Gemara, by the way, where Rashi says, Loi hitiru chachamim lotzis l'tchum aidei eruv elo l'dvar mitzvah, the chachamim did not allow you to go out of the tchum through an eruv only for a dvar mitzvah, it comes out from what Rashi is saying, that even if you made the Eruv for a Dvar Mitzvah, let's say, for example, because there's a Talmid Chacham coming, or because the mayor or whatever is coming, et cetera, and you also decided, you know what, now that I have the Eruv over there, I want to also walk out over there, stand for a hike, it comes out from what Rashi is saying that would be also. Most of the Rishonim disagree with that, and that's not Lahalacha. Lahalacha is, once you put, first of all, the Rambam writes there that if the Dieved, even though the Gemara is saying over here that you're supposed to do it only for a Dvar Mitzvah, the Dieved that Rambam says, and this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, if you put down an Eruv Tchumen for any other reason, you shouldn't have done it, but nevertheless, for the evidence valid. And certainly, yeah, if you put it down for Dvar Mitzvah, then already you're allowed to use it for other purposes as well. Okay. So anyway, so Rabbi Yosef is saying, Ein Ma'arvin Elul Dvar Mitzvah. So the Gemara says, Ma'ed Kamash Malon, what's Rabbi Yosef's Chiddush? Taneinu, we said in the Mishnah, L'chol Mishiyelech L'Beis HaEvil, or L'Beis HaMishnah. We said in our Mishnah, we gave examples where a person is putting down the Eruv Tchumen on behalf of other people so that they can go to a shiva house or to a wedding, which are both mitzvahs, to be Menachem Avol or to be Mesameach Chasen Mekala. So, of course, we see from the Mishnah that it's only for mitzvah purposes. The answer is Ma'ud Tema Urcha de Milsik Latani. Without Rabbi Yosef telling us, you would say the Mishnah is mentioning in that, because those are typical examples where a person needs to go out of the city on Shabbos. But you wouldn't know that it means that it's only in those cases. Kamash Malan, therefore, Rabbi Yosef wants us to know that you're only supposed to do it for cases similar to those where they involve a mitzvah. No, people don't sit shiva on Shabbos, but they also don't necessarily go to shul. They may still stay home, and you still go, and the Gemara in Shabbos tells us, actually, you don't tell them, Amokam Yenachem Eschem, you tell them something appropriate for Shabbos, but whatever, yeah, you could have that, okay. Then we said in the Mishnah of Chol Shekibel Olav Mibo'od Yoyim, we said anybody who accepted the Eruv on themselves before Shabbos can go, and anybody who didn't can't. So the question is, Shamet Mino Ein Breira. It seems from our Mishnah that there's no Breira. We don't say if a person accepted it after Shabbos began, then it means retroactively he was one of the ones who was included before Shabbos. Yesh Breira, because if we said that Breira works, Ki Gloy Milse L'mafreya D'mibo'od Yoyim Habanichalei, then we would have L'mafreya, it should mean that he wanted to do that. That he wanted to do that earlier. Now, the problem is, now we have in many places in Shas, the Machlokas, where the Yesh Breira and Ein Breira, L'maisa, we had it earlier in our Masechti, even we had it, but... We had a case over there involving where a person puts down Eruvin in two different directions. But yeah, there is. We had Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. We had Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. Yeah. It's a Machlokas in many, many places in Shas. The problem is that L'maskana, we say that the accepted halacha is that we say there's ein breira when it comes to things d'araisa, but there is breira when it comes to things d'rabanan. Eruv Tchumen is d'rabanan. Why would we be saying ein breira? So the answer is Amar Rav Ashi hodi'u v'loi hodi'uhu katani. So Rav Ashi says, right, the Mishnah doesn't mean whether he agreed to it. It means that they inform him of it before Shabbos. If they didn't even inform him until Shabbos begins, hey, we put down an Eruv Tchumen, so you can go to this if you want, but if we only found out about it after Shabbos begins, you can't say Brero or not. He didn't know about it when he didn't know about it. But if he knew about it before Shabbos begins, then yes, he has the option after Shabbos begins to choose whether he wants to use it or not. That would be Eruv Tchumen, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so for example, yeah, if a person were to do that, he's putting down an Eruv Tumen, let's say, for example, you know, now, but yeah, so, well, yeah, so the Nusach of Eruv Tumen, I don't know if it includes Be'ir HaZois, but whatever, it could. I mean, the difference is usually Eruv Tumen you put down on an individual level. You don't necessarily put down an Eruv Tumen for many other people. Our Mishnah is describing a scenario where you do, but you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. So nowadays, when people put down an Eruv Tumen, I don't know if they put it down on behalf of everybody else as well. I don't see it in the Siddur just now, but whatever. Right. I mean, you usually only deal with Eruv Tumen when you're in a bungalow colony or something. Whatever. But as long as you inform them of it. But an example of it is, we mentioned a couple of weeks ago the example back when they would go regularly from Gan Yisrael Parksville to the Parksville Shul over there, and you'd have, you know, a counselor would tell the kids that whoever behaves over Shabbos gets to go with me on Shabbos morning over there to help make the minyan. So that would be an example. They know before Shabbos that an Eruv Tumen was put down. On Shabbos itself, the decision is being made who can go and who can't. So they have to make an Eruv Tumen? Yeah, because it was on the end. Okay, anyway. Amar Rav Asi, Katan ben Sheish Yotze Be'eruv Imoy. Rav Asi says a child up to 6 years old can go out with his mother's Eruv, meaning his mother puts down an Eruv Tumen in a certain direction. She wasn't mezakeh to him, but up to 6 years old, he's considered like part of her, and therefore he automatically goes along with her. You don't need to have him in mind for the Eruv. Wait. Mesvi, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. What do you mean until he's 6 years old? Katan chatzarech le'ima yotze be'eruv imay. A braisa says that a katan who still needs his mother can go out with his mother's eruv. V'she'en tzarech le'ima ein yotze be'eruv imay. If he no longer needs his mother as much, then he can't go out with her eruv automatically. Then they need to specifically have him in mind when they're putting down the Eruv. And so what age is that? Now we have a similar concept when it comes to at what age does a child need to, at what point does a child need to sit in a sukkah and eat in a sukkah and whatever. So the Mishnah says, a child who doesn't need his mother as much as chayev in sukkah. So we ask about that in the Gemara in sukkah. What is the definition of that? Rabbi Yanai, so they said in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yanai, when the child is old enough that when he goes to the bathroom, his mother doesn't have to wipe him, that's considered ein sarach le'ima anymore. And Rabbi Shimon Lokish Oim Omar, Kol Shineo Mishnase Be'ene Kode Ima, when he wakes up and from his sleep and he doesn't start calling out, Mommy, Mommy, he doesn't call out, actually, first, Be'ene Kode Ima, he doesn't call out Mommy. He doesn't call out Ima. So he says, Ima, Sakhar, what do you mean? He doesn't call out Mami, Gdolim Nami, Koru. Even older children sometimes call out for their mother the first thing they wake up. Ela Ema, Kol Shaneo Mishnasa, Ve'ena Kori, Ima, Ima. He doesn't keep on calling. He'll call one time, but if he sees his mother is sleeping or whatever, or not available, then he'll take care of whatever it is himself. Go to the bathroom or get himself a snack or whatever exactly. So at that point, he's Ena Tzarech Le'ima. The Kama, and how old is a child when he reaches that point, is Kibar Arba, Kibar Chomish, when he's 4 or 5 years old, depending on how advanced the kid is. So we see already the kid is 5 years old, already in his fifth year, 4 and a little bit, then already he's considered Ein Tzarech Le'imai as far as that din. Preposterous, the same thing would apply to this over here as far as the Eruv. Why by the Eruv are you saying until he's... As long as he's in his sixth year, most of the Rishonim, by the way, understand ben sheish over here to mean when he's in his sixth year. So in other words, after he turns 5, the Meiri understands to be 6 full years. But whatever, the point is, we see that by sukkah, it's only 4 or 5. The answer is Amar Rav Yishua b'Rav Idi, Ki Amar Rav Asi. You know what the case of Asi is talking about? Yeah, you're right. Usually, a 5-year-old already, you would need to have him separately in mind for the eruv. Rav Asi is talking about Kigun She'irov Olav Oviv Latzafan V'Imo L'Dorim. Suppose that His parents both made an Erev Tumen, but each one in different directions. His father to the north, his mother to the south. So now, in other words, what we're saying, so we're not talking, in other words, Rabbi Yeshua ben Dovid is saying like this. When it comes to actually having him in mind for the Erev and putting extra food for him, that you need already once he's 4 or 5. But when do we say that the cutoff is 6 is when an Erev has been made for him. But the question is, in which direction is the one that we're going to give him? Even when he's in a 60 year, he still prefers his mother's company. So therefore, if his father put in one direction and his mother in another direction, we can assume he'd more likely want to go where his mother is going. So therefore, no contradiction again. So far we would say like this: up until he's 4 or 5 years old, you don't even need to have him in mind for the Erev at all. Automatically, he's included in his mother's Erev. Between 4 or 5 and 6, we would say that you have to have him in mind. But then, if there's a choice which Erev, then automatically he goes to his mother. After that, not necessarily would it be Dafka his mother's Erev. It could just as well be his father's Eruv. And actually, if you did that, you might even end up with a situation where he's a cham or gamel, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, where Eruvin were put for him in both directions, and he ends up stuck in the middle. So after 6, we'd have to be careful. I don't know if that would be the halacha, but it's possible, since after all, then it could be equally well with his mother or with his father, so then we'd have to be careful about that. Okay, the Gemara says, though, maybe. I mean, I don't know about that. But the same way as a gadol, we learned earlier that if an adult tells two people make an eruv for me, and one makes it in the north and one makes it in the south, then he's stuck. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says Nesvi. I have a contradiction to that explanation, though. A braisa says katan shatzarich leima yotze be'eruv imay. A katan who needs his mother can go out with his mother's eruv, meaning that you don't have to have him separately in mind. But kama ad ben sheish, and what is that until he's 6 years old? So, that contradicts Rabbi Yeshua bar Rav Edi's explanation. Rabbi Yeshua bar Rav Edi again is saying that there's a specific example, a specific scenario where the father is in one direction, the mother is in the other direction. The problem is that the Braisa says ad ben sheish, until 6, which clearly means the ages underneath it. Now, obviously, when the kid is a year or two old, you don't need to be mezakeh for him the Eruv separately. So the same way the Braisa is saying that up until 6, you don't need to be mezakeh for him separately. Whereas according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Dovid's understanding, you would need to. Once he's 4 or 5, you need to be mezakeh to him. So the Braisa contradicts him. Okay, the Gemara says, you're right, Tiufta. It is a contradiction. The question then is, would we have to say then that this Braisa also contradicts Rav Asi, where Rav Asi had said again that the Gemara assumed, now whenever we have the word ad, you always have the question, is it ad b'chlal or ad v'loy ad b'chlal? When the Braisa says up to 6, does it mean up to and including 6 or the 6th year or whatever, or does it mean up to but not including that? So the Gemara is assuming at this point that ad means v'loy ad b'chlal, meaning, in other words, that once he begins his 6th year, then you can't anymore. Then he can't be yotze with his mother's eruv. Rav Asi is saying until 6, meaning him to me. Rav Asi is saying that when he's 6, meaning when he's in his 6th year, you still could. So the Braisa would contradict him as well. The answer is no. Amalach Rav Asi, ad v'ad b'chlal. No, Rav Asi would tell you this is one of those cases in the Braisa where ad means v'ad b'chlal. So the Braisa is also, when the Braisa says ad ben sheish, means up to and including when he's in his 6th year. Then he can still be yotze with his mother's eruv. Okay. Then you have to, after that, you have to add a little more, and you have to be mezakeh to him. Yeah. Well, you have to inform him, but more to the point is that, I don't know if you have to inform him, actually, I guess so, but more to the point is you have to have somebody be zoicha in it on his behalf. Same way as you would if you're making it for adults. You have to have somebody. If it's one family, no, but even if it's one family, that's the point. You still have that, we're still saying it's not automatic because again, remember, keep in mind, unlike Erev Chatzeres, we said before, Erev Tumen is not necessarily a schus for a person because you're losing in the other direction. So we're going to see in a minute. We're going to see actually in a minute in the Gemara which ones you need their das and which ones you don't. But there's having their das, but then there's being mezakeh the foods that they actually physically have ownership of it that you would need. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara says, Lema Tavit Tuftei Derabyanai Vereshlokish. Would we have to say that this Braisa is contradicting Rabbi Yana and Vereshlokish's understandings by Sukkah, where we said Rabbi Yana and Vereshlokish have given their respective understandings of when a cotton is Ainat Sarach Leimai, whether his mother still has to wipe him, or whether he calls out repeatedly for her when he wakes up in the middle of the night? They're saying 4 or 5 already is Ain Sarach Leimai, and here the Braisa is saying 6. The answer is like Kasha, Hod de Isse Avui Bemosa, Hod de Loi Isse Avui Bemosa. No, because you can say it depends whether his father is there in town. So if his father is there and the child often goes with him, then already once he reaches 4 or his 4th year already, he's already Ainat Sarach Leimai so much because he has his father. The Braisa, when it says up to 6, is talking about when his father is not in town. His father may have passed away, he may be traveling, they may be divorced, whatever it is. The point is, therefore, he doesn't have his father, and therefore he needs his mother until 6. Now, we couldn't have used that answer to explain Rabbi Yeshua ben Eder of Idi, because Rabbi Yeshua ben Eder of Idi himself didn't make that distinction. He himself had to say that we're talking about they made Eruvin in 2 different directions. So we can't use that answer to for end for him, but we can use that answer to for end for Rabbi Yana and Rish Lakish, that if his father's around, then he's Ainat Sarach Leimai after he reaches his 4th or 5th year. If his mother's not around, then he has till 6. By the way, at the bottom of the previous Amud, Tosfos mentions, now if we say that you can only make an Eruv Tumen for a Dvar Mitzvah, then why are we taking along the kid anyway? What Dvar Mitzvah is there? So Tosfos says, first of all, practically speaking, if the mother wants to go someplace, the kid is going to want to go along, so you need to arrange that. Also, then Tosfos says, Tosfos says, Inami, but Kotnami Ikam Mitzvah Lachanchai. There is a mitzvah to be Mechanech the kid as well, which leads the Trumas Hadeshin to discuss. The Trumas Hadeshin discusses in his Truvas the question, to what extent do we say that a mother has a mitzvah to be Mechanech the kid? We usually say that the mitzvah of Chinuch is on the father. And here the Gemara is saying that we're talking about a case where the father is not available for one reason or another, and we're saying that the mother has a mitzvah lachanchoi, so at least it's considered a mitzvah as far as the definition of mitzvah for Erev Tchumen, so maybe that shows that the mother has a certain mitzvah of chinuch as well. Bris Mila is a chiyuv on the father, right. Right, but to be exact, it wasn't that we, right, but the point is, she has no more chiyuv in the case where the father is not available to do the bris milah. The mother has no more chiyuv than anybody else. The chiyuv is on Beis Din. So yeah, the mother can arrange it, of course, but she has no, there's no particular chiyuv on her more than there is on anybody else. Yeah. Maybe, but so the Trumas Hadeshin, like I said, takes up this question and discusses the pros and cons of it. To what extent do we say that the mother has a mitzvah of chinuch? Yeah. A person can make an Eruv on behalf of his young son or daughter. Now, by the way, in the previous perek, who is included and who is automatically included in a person's Eruv Chatzeres, not who's automatically included, we said who can be Zoiche in the Eruv Chatzeres on behalf of other people. We also used the words Gadol and Katan over there, and we mentioned over there that Tosfos discusses that maybe Gadol and Katan over there doesn't mean age, it means as far as whether they're Samoch al Shulchanai, are they dependent on his table? They're eating from his food, and they're eating at his table. And in fact, you have 2 opinions about it in Shulchan Aruch. We said over there whether you can be mezakeh through an older child who's still eating by your table or a younger child who's not. Here, Tosfos says gadol and katan means exactly what it sounds like. Gadol means an adult, katan means a child. Anyway, so the Braisa says you can make an Eruv on behalf of your young son and daughter, meaning, in other words, that you don't need their das, or on behalf of your Eved Knani or Shivcha Knanis, Bein L'daiton, Bein Shaloi L'daiton, whether with their das or without it. But you can't make an Eruv on behalf of your Eved Ivri or Shivcha or Amo Ivriya, Veloyai de Bnoyo Bitagdolim, or your older son and daughter, Veloyai de Ishtoi, or your wife, Ella Midaitam, only with their das. They have to agree to it, because again, it's a choiv for them, because they're losing in the other direction, and therefore you need their das, you need their consent that they want to be included in this Eruv. An Eved Knani is chayiv in certain mitzvahs. No, it's not a matter of chinuch. It's a matter of the Eved Kanani himself is chayiv in certain mitzvahs. So therefore, so if you make, first of all, you can have, let's say, for example, a person you often had in those times, a person was accompanied by their Eved wherever they're going in order that the Eved can help them out with little tasks that they need along the way. So you can have, let's say, yeah, whatever, the, yeah, let's say the bathroom or whatever, yeah. So you could have that the master has the mitzvah to go there to be Menachem Avol or Mesameach Chasam Kala or whatever, and automatically he brings along his Eved with him. But the point is, in other words, the Eved has we don't care whether the Eved has a different das, he's automatically included in your Eruv. But not an Eved Ivri or Omar Ivriya, because you don't own their goof, you only own their work, and not older sons, not older children, and not your wife yet. Tanya Idach, then we learn in another book. The wife also, she has her own das. Tanya Idach, then we learn in another braisa. Lo ya'arav adam ayde bnei bite agdolim ba'ayde abdav shechase ivrim v'lo ya'ayde ishtoi. Another braisa says, a person cannot make an eruv for his older son or daughter, or for his eved, ivri or omo ivriya, v'lo ya'ayde ishtoi, or for his wife, elami daitan, only if they agree to it, only with their das. So again, as we said on Omer Aleph, they can agree even after Shabbos begins, but they have to be informed about it before Shabbos, so they can have in mind at some point to be included in it. But he can make an Eruv Tumen on behalf of his Eved Knani or Shivcha Knanis, by the Bnei Bite Aknanim, or for his young son or daughter, Bein Ledaitan, Ven Shaloi Ledaitan, whether with their das or without it, he can make the Eruv even without them knowing about it. Because their hand is like his, in other words, they have no separate reshus of their own. Now, continues the Braisa, with all of them, suppose that they made their own Eruv, the Eruv Alehen Daban, but their master or their father or whatever also made an Eruv for them, let's say in a different direction, Yotzin B'shal Rabban, then they go out based on their master's one. So let's say, for example, the Eved made himself an Eruv east of the city, and the master made one west of the city. So we're saying that the one that's west of the city takes precedence, and that's the one that the Eved uses for that Shabbos. He put down his own in a different direction, doesn't matter. Except for his wife, because she could be moicha. So the question is, Isha Maishna, okay, so his wife can be Moshe, so can his older sons and daughters, so can his Eved Ivri or Omo Ivriya, all of them have the ability to be Moshe. Why are you singling out his wife? The answer is, you're right, it doesn't mean only his wife, it means everybody else who's similar in that they have their own ability to be koina things, and they have their own independence. So yes, it would include the Omah Ivriya or Eved Ivri, and it would include the older sons and daughters, where if he put down an Eruv in one direction and they put down in a different direction, then or not even in a different direction. Because they could protest. So therefore, they're that view. So, yeah, the problem is time of demochi. So what does that imply? Only if she was moicha, then says, I don't want to go in that direction. Only then does the Eruv not take effect for her, implying ha sama, but if she doesn't say anything one way or the other, nafka b'debaila, it sounds like she could be yotze with her husband's Eruv. The problem is, hakatoni reisha elamidaitam. The reisha said, you have to inform them. My lav da amri ein. Now, on the face of it, when it says midaitam, on the face of it means they said yes. So, in other words, it would be fakert. If she says yes, then that eruv is in effect for her. But if she doesn't say anything, then it sounds like it's not, because it's not midaitam. The answer is loy. My elam midaitam de ishtiku. No, the word midaitam just means that you inform them and they're shtika kaida. They don't say anything. La puki hecha da amri loy. As opposed to where they say no. So if they say yes, or they don't say anything at all, then it would work for them. If they explicitly say, no, I don't want that Eruv, I'd like to go in a different direction this Shabbos, then the Eruv doesn't work for them. The question is, but what about the Braisa continues the case, where they made an Eruv in one direction, and the master or husband or whatever made an Eruv in a different direction. We said Yotzin v'shel Rabban. Now, in that case, we said by the Eved Knani, or the children or whatever, the young children, we said they go out with their masters. Ustamahu. Now, over there, they didn't say anything, that they don't want his Eruv. And we're still saying, except for the wife and the other ones that are similar to her, that they're not yotze. So what is it? So do you actually have to say no, or is it enough that, or do we say shtikar kaida or not? So Rava says, because if they put down an Eruv in a different direction, that itself, even without saying anything, constitutes the greatest machal possible. I don't want you Eruv in that direction. I want my own Eruv in a different direction. So even without saying anything, automatically, so again, if it's his wife or his older son or daughter or whatever, then the very fact that they put down an Eruv in a different direction means that they don't want to use his. So... No, so, but then before, fine, so before Shabbos, they would say, you know what, I know I put that down, but forget about it, I don't want it after all, I'm gonna use yours. But like this, if they still plan to use yours, then that itself, their own, I mean, then that shows it's a mahal. So therefore, so the bottom line is, if they say yes, then good, they can be, then good, yours is in effect for them, as long as you put down enough food and we're mezakeh to them. Oh, if they say, mezakeh could be through a third party. You have somebody else, but if they say no, then no, that one is not an effect for them, and they either have to have their own Eruv in a different direction, or of course they could not have an Eruv at all and just stay in town and in the 2,000 amos of the town for Shabbos. And if they make a separate Eruv, then that's the equivalent of saying no. But if they don't say anything one way or the other, then shtikar kaida, and then it works for them. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, pretty much. By the way, I should mention also, when we talked about on Amud Aleph, the machloikas, about whether we're saying over here, on Amud Aleph, we said that you can't, you're to be ma'ariv, you can only do for a dvar mitzvah, and the pros and cons of that, there is one point that some of the posts can bring up. Maybe there's a difference between an eruv of food and an eruv on foot. We learned earlier in the Masechta that there are two ways of making an Eruv Tumen. You could put down the food there, and that means you don't have to put it down there yourself. You could send it with a shliach or whatever before Shabbos. Or you can have you actually walk there and have in mind that this is going to be my Makom Shvisa and stay there throughout Bein HaShemashes. That one maybe you could do even if it's not for a Dvar Mitzvah. You just want it stam in order to be able to take a hike or whatever. That's one possibility that the post can bring up. Okay. Mishnah says, Kamahu shiurai. What is the shiur of the food for an Eruv Tchumen or an Eruv Chatzeres? Mazin shtei sugas l'chol echad ve'echad. Two meals worth for each person. And how much, and what do we mean two meals? How do you define the size of a meal? Mezoine l'chol v'le l'shabes divi Rameir. Rameir says, we're talking about the amount of food that a person eats for weekday meals rather than Shabbos meals, says Rameir. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a little Shabbos for Lechel. Rabbi Yehuda says the other way around. Shabbos meals, not weekday meals. V'zeh v'zeh miskavnim lahokel. Now, both of them actually are trying to be lenient. Each one is trying to say that the kind of meal they're talking about is smaller than the other one. Namely, Reb Meir figures, on Shabbos a person eats more because the food is better. There's always room, there's always extra room for good food. In fact, there are some places in Shas, I think in Beitza, where it talks about a Neshama Yisera, where Rashi explains part of the Neshama Yisera is the fact that a person has a greater capacity to eat and enjoy their food on Shabbos than they do during the week. Yeah, so in other words, it's a ruchniyistic thing, but it also has a gashmiyistic effect on his body. Anyway, so that's Rabbi Yehuda's view of it. That's Rabbi Meir's view of it. So therefore, on a weekday, a person eats less, and therefore we can be makel and use two weekday meals rather than two Shabbos meals, as opposed to Rabbi Yehuda figures that on Shabbos you have three meals, instead of on a weekday you only have regularly two meals, so therefore you're dividing up your food, and you have less per meal on Shabbos, because you take the same amount of food and divide it into three meals instead of two. Rabbi Hananel over here gives a different explanation of it. He says the vort is that Rabbi Meir takes the view, on Shabbos, since you make Kiddush first, the wine stimulates your appetite, and therefore you eat more. As opposed to on weekdays, you don't do that. Rabbi Yehuda, meanwhile, says, on Shabbos, you have all the other things that you have over there to eat. You have meat, you have fish, or whatever, so you don't eat as much bread. On weekdays, you don't have as much things, you don't have as much side dishes or whatever, so you fill up on bread. On Shabbos you fill up more on the other side dishes and things. So therefore, that's another way of understanding why the Shabbos meal, meaning not the total amount the person eats, but the bread that he eats would be less than it would be on weekdays. Yeah, they drank wine a lot, but not necessarily that they're kevei asuda on it. And in particular, they're eating it during the meal, so it doesn't necessarily stimulate the appetite as much yet. Okay. By the way, the Mephoshim talk about, so why Bechlal? I mean, if we're talking about an Erev Tumen over here, and the idea is that it should be your Makom Shvisa for Shabbos, why are we telling you only two meals? On Shabbos, you're supposed to have three meals. We should be requiring you to put down three meals worth. And there's a few different answers, one of them being that we know there's a famous Machlokas. Do you actually need to eat bread at Shalosh Shudas, or is it enough that you eat Minei Taugima, just like snacks or whatever? So our Mishnah could be working with that you don't necessarily need a full meal for Shalosh Shudas. Okay. Anyway. Okay. So what's the actual? So far we're talking about more like a subjective thing. Okay. So we're saying the meal is defined as based on what you would eat on Shabbos or what you would eat on weekday. What's the actual amount? So Rabbi Yochanan and Breukheimer mikikah bepunyan midalad sin besela. Rabbi Yochanan and Breukheimer defines it like this. You have a loaf of bread that costs a punyan. A punyan is 1/48 of a sela. When wheat sells at the price of 4 sa for a sela. So let's make the calculation. Starting with the sakadaitach that we're going to see. The Gemara is going to modify this calculation, but we'll start with the initial assumption. A sa contains 6 kavim. And a kav contains 24 beitzim. So if you buy 4 sa for a sela, 4 sa then is 24 kavim, because six kav to the sa. If you're buying a loaf of bread that costs a punyan, which is 1/48 of a sela, then you come out with a half a kav. You come out with a half a kav, which would be therefore 12 eggs. Be the size of 12 eggs. That would be shtei sudah. So it would come out that one sudah is the size of 6 eggs worth of bread. So again, we're going to modify that calculation of the Gemara, but that's the initial assumption. Reb Shimon Omer, shtei yodis lekikah mishalosh lekav. Reb Shimon says you start with a loaf of bread that is 1/3 of a kav, and you take 2/3 of that loaf, and that will be your shtei sudas. So it comes out, according to him, that the shtei sudas are, it comes out, according to him, the shtei sudas is 2/9 of a kav. So if a kav is 24 beitzim, then it comes out you're talking a little less than 6 beitzim, and you're doing like 5 1/3 or whatever, and therefore it comes out that one suda, according to him, would be 2 2/3 beitzim. So you have 2 2/3 according to him, and you have 6 according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Breukheimer. So the Gemara is going to discuss that point. Continues the Mishnah, chetzia. Once we establish that amount, what's considered shtei sudas, what's considered the loaf of bread that we use for an eruv, then chetzia. If we divide that in half, then we have the amount labayis hamenuga. Then we have the amount that if a person stays in a house with saras long enough to eat that, then his clothes are going to be tamei as well. We talked about it at the very beginning of the Masech. There you have the case: a person walks into a house that has saras, he becomes tamei right away, but the clothing he's wearing does not become tamei unless he stays there b'kdei achilas pras, and a pras is a half, so that's a half of the loaf we were just talking about. So it would mean, in other words, we take the size of the loaf that Rabbi Yochanan ben Breukheimer or Rabbi Shimon are talking about, we divide that in half, the time it takes to eat that is the amount of time which is called b'chdei achilas pras, and that's the amount that if he stays there that amount of time, then his clothes are going to become tamei. Of course, we use k'dei achilas pras in other contexts in halacha as well, and we're going to discuss tomorrow in the Gemara other opinions besides Rabbi Yochanan ben Breukheimer and Rabbi Shimon's of what the amount for the Eruv is, and therefore what k'dei achilas pras is. We'll talk about that more tomorrow, which is, of course, very negei la halacha. When we eat matzah, if a person has to eat on Yom Kippur, how far apart should it be, etc. And then a half of that half, so a quarter of the original loaf, is the amount that if a person eats it of food that is tamei, then he becomes tamei derabanan, and he has to dip in a mikveh before he can eat truma or kodshim or anything. We learned in Masechta Shabbos that there were the Yud Ches Dover, Gzeiros that the Chachamim made in various things of Tumah V'Tahara. One, we mentioned over there in that connection the concept that if a person eats Tomei food, then Midrabanon he becomes Tomei. Tosfos actually discusses over here that this particular Gzeira may have been even before the Yud Ches Dover, and then the Gzeira of Yud Ches Dover, they added more details to it. But the basic idea that a person eats Tomei food, then they become Tomei Dirabanan, that might be from long before that. Okay. Tosafos says with the original gzeira would have been that if a person eats two kibbutzes of it, and then later on with the Yud Chas Davar, they reduced it to one kibbutz. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. V'chama mazen shtei sodas. So what is this mazen shtei sodas? According to the Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, who are defining it as the amount that you would eat for two weekday meals or for two Shabbos meals, respectively. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rab, tauti rifta ikar yosa. Two loaves of bread of the kind that plowmen use. So you have a Rashi explains that ikar yosa means people who lead the oxen to plow. So they take along their lunch with them to the field, so that they can eat, during a break and in work or whatever. So they have two loaves of bread of the size that they would use. That's considered the Muslim shtei sodas, according to the Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, respectively. Rav Ada Ba'ava, Amar Tauti Rifti Nahar Papiyosa. Rav Ada Ba'ava says it eats two loaves of bread of the size that they make in Nahar Papa, a certain place in Bava. Okay. Amar Rav Yosef, Bre de Rava, or de Rabba, really, it's supposed to be. Rav Yosef asks Rav Yosef, the son of Rabba, Avucha Kaman Svirale, which your father, Rabba, which one of them did he hold like a mayor or like Rav Yehuda? So he says, Kirab Meir, Svirle. So Rabbi Yosef, Brei de Rabba, answered that he held like Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Yosef says, Anon nami Kirab Meir, Svirle. I also hold like Rabbi Meir, that a person eats less on weekdays than on Shabbos, to eat Kirab Yehuda, if we were going to go like Rabbi Yehuda, Kasha Hoda Amri Inchi, then we'd have a problem. The fact is, people say, Rav Cholabasim HaShchiach, as we mentioned in the Mishnah, people always have room for good food, so therefore the food is better on Shabbos. According to Rabbi Yehuda, what do you mean that a person eats less on Shabbos than on weekdays? Adrav, a person eats more on Shabbos than on weekdays. So therefore, it's more logical to follow the mayor's svara that the amount is defined based on the amount that a person eats during the week when the food is not as tasty and then they eat less of it. Okay. We said Rabbi Yechon ben Breuka, Omer. So we had Rabbi Yechon ben Breuka says the definition of the shtei sodas. Again, we said, according to him, it comes out that two sodas is 12 eggs, half a calf, and one soda, therefore, is 6 eggs. According to Rabbi Shimon, we said it comes out that the two sodas are 5 1/3 eggs, and half of that, one soda would be 2 2/3 eggs. So the Gemara says, Tana, Ukroivin Divrayim Lias Shavim. What they're saying, Rabbi Yechon ben Breuka and Rabbi Shimon, is almost the same thing. I said, what do you mean? What do you mean? It's almost the same thing. Me, dummy. Did Rabbi Yechon and Abba Sodasa Lakaba? Did Rabbi Shimon Tesha Sodasa Lakaba? It comes out, when you do the math, according to Rabbi Yechon and Mabreka, you get 4 sodas out of a calf, because 6 eggs, and there are 24 eggs in a calf. And according to Rabbi Shimon, you're getting 9 sodas out of a calf, because 2 2/3 times 9 equals 24. It's very, very far apart. The answer is, Amen of Chistet Seyman Shlish Lechenbeni. But Meir says, because you're not factoring in the fact that the storekeeper who's baking the bread has to make a profit. When we say in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yechon ben Breuka is talking about when wheat sells for four sah for a seller, fine, that's the raw wheat, but then you have to make it into bread. That takes time and effort, and then time is money. So therefore, what happens is the storekeeper doesn't sell the bread at the same price the wheat came from. The storekeeper earns a third as profit, so he buys a half a calf of wheat for a punyan, like we said. Then 1/3 of that is his profit. 2/3 of that is what he sells the bread for. So therefore you don't get two sodas out of half a calf. You get 3 sodas. In other words, it comes out 4. It comes out 4 eggs rather than 6 per soda. So that's much closer. So the question is, Rakati Lamau Tisho Lamaushis. Okay, so you still have then, according to Rabbi Shimon, you get 9 meals out of each calf, because 2 2/3. According to Rabbi Yechon ben Breuka, you're getting 6 meals, because you four kibbutzes per meal, but that's still very far apart. 2 2/3 versus 4, or 9 is 6 versus 9 within a calf, is still very far apart. Now, so the Gemara says, Elaki Idoch to Rav Chista. No, rather we have to consider a different statement of Rav Chista. He says the chenveni subtracts a half for his profit. So making the same calculation, then it comes out that he buys the half a calf. He buys 12 kibbutzes for a punyan, but he ends up selling only 6 of it. for punyan. So it comes out that each meal is three betas rather than four, like we said before. So therefore, so the question is, it's still not the same thing. Okay, so it comes out then, according to Reb Shimon, you get 9 meals out of a kav. Each meal is 2 2/3 beitzim. According to Reb Yechon ben Breuka, you get only 8 meals out of a kav, because each one is 3. Okay, the Gemara says, fine. Fine, we're not saying they're exactly the same. It's close. 2 2/3 versus 3, or 8 versus 9 is fairly close. But it's a lot closer than we thought originally. The question is now, so Rabbi Yechon ben Breuka is talking in terms of the price of the actual wheat from which the bread is made, whereas Rabbi Shimon is talking about the price of the actual loaf of bread. Okay, so the Gemara says, Kasha de Rav Chista de Rav Chista. So we have two statements of Rav Chista. First, he's saying that the storekeeper makes a profit of 1/3, and then we're saying he makes a profit of a half. So which is it? The answer is, like Kasha, Hodka Yohi Balabais Tzivi, Hodla Yohi Balabais Tzivi. It depends. You, the Balabais, who are going to be buying the bread from him, do you supply the wood for baking the bread? That also costs money. So if you supply the wood, then the storekeeper doesn't have that as his expense. Therefore, he doesn't need to charge as much of a markup. Therefore, he can sell it to you more cheaply, you can sell the bread to you more cheaply. That was Rav Chista's first statement, that he only needs a 33% profit, as opposed to, if you don't supply the wood, then he needs 50%, well, not profit, he needs 50% markup, because he needs to also account for the cost of the wood, which also costs money. Well, even if he makes it himself, the point is, right, so the 33 or the 50% includes his time, his labor, the extra 17% would account for the wood. Befrat, the Gemara mentions in Hanizokin, and then the sugi about the Churban over there, when you have about the three rich people of Yerushalayim who were willing to supply the city for 21 years during the siege, the Gemara mentions that one of them who was going to supply wood was the best one of all, because you need so much wood in order to bake even a small amount of bread. So the wood is quite expensive. So therefore, that's what we're saying, that you need a much larger markup on the price in order to be able to make up for that. Whereas if the Balabais himself supplies the wood, then the chenmeni still needs to make a profit, but he doesn't need. But his markup has to be much less, because he doesn't have as large an expense to put into it. Okay, shkoyach, everyone.